Hey, this is Mike Gilbert from Flotsam and Jetsam, and you are listening to Focused on Metal.
Hey, Metalhead, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to another episode of Focus on Metal. And this week, back for, I think, the fourth time, is Flotsam and Jetsam guitarist Michael Gilbert. Yep, four appearances so far on Focus on Metal. Definitely puts Mike into the FOM high mileage group. He's been pretty good about coming on board and talking to us every time they release a new album. And if he's on the show, then that means there is a new album afoot from Phoenix's own Flotsam and Jetsam. That's right, September 13th, these guys are supposed to drop the new one, I Am the Weapon. And I have to say, from what I've heard so far with previews and stuff, this is a barn burner of an album, which is pretty amazing when you consider that this is their 15th studio album. And they still have incredible songwriting, drive, anger, all that great shit that makes great metal. They've got a couple lyric videos up on YouTube, as well as a couple of regular full-form videos. Got a good one up there for A New Kind of Hero. Take special note if you go check that one out, the drums up front. That is past Focus on Metal guest Ken Mary on drums once again for Flotsam, and good demonstration of what Ken can do with that one. And I think it's got a little bit of a Metallica vibe going on in that one, which imagine that, right? But there's another one they have up there for the song Primal. And that one has got this kind of other surprising bit of melodicism in it, and is even kind of this essence of European power metal going on with it. So again, 15 albums in, these guys are still showing growth and just incredible songwriting. And I should mention that AFM's putting this one out, and they have that in several formats, obviously digital, always digital, right? A couple different versions of the CD, a limited one, and then a digipack, four different versions of the vinyl. And as of mixing this right now, I checked right before, and they still had two out of the four available on the AFM shop. There was a bundle with the clear red version, and then they have another version that's kind of an orange and black splatter that's exclusive to the AFM web shop. Those are still available. And, while I was up there looking around, because I'm a vinyl whore, I did notice they still have available the silver variant of the Flotsam and Jetsam self-titled album. I've already got it, but I'm just letting you know that they've got that one up there, as well as a couple of vinyl versions of the prior album, Blood in the Water. So if you're a Flotsam completist and you want to fill out that vinyl catalog, you can head up to the AFM web shop, check that out. And of course, the album's available all kinds of other places as well. And you'd think with, four appearances in, like, how much more could we have to talk to Michael about? But this week, Richie still delves into more Flotsam history, in particular talking to Michael about the kind of that period where he left the band, and what it felt to come back to the band and stuff. So that's all covered in this one, as well as talking about the new album, what's going on with Flotsam, all that good shit. So as always, great interview with Michael this week. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Richie and Flotsam and Jetsam guitarist Michael Gilbert.
Hey, is that Michael?
Hey, is this Richie?
Yeah, how you doing, Michael? Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, what's going on? How are you?
I'm okay. So you at home?
Yep, I'm at home today, feeling a little bit under the weather from flights a couple of days ago. I got some little cold thing going on.
Okay.
So if I cough a little bit, my apologies.
Oh, you're cool. Were you out playing shows?
Yeah, we just did Wacken last Saturday, so we went over there just for the weekend, and then we came back home. We were supposed to be having dates right now, but they couldn't book it because the festival's over there. I'm sure you're familiar with all that.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard to get club shows during the festival season over there.
Yeah.
But we're heading back on Saturday to do a couple of club shows, and then we've got with Dynamo. I've never played Dynamo, so I'm looking forward to that one.
for some reason, over the years, to talk to musicians, I often think, why don't you just move to Europe?
I love Europe. It's such a great vacation for me. I'm so fortunate to just, I get to go a couple times a year, you know, and I'm blessed, man. I'm lucky. You know, this late in life with the band and stuff like that, just being able to do it. Pretty cool, man.
Yeah. Michael, tell me the experience of playing at Wacken. Do you get a chance to see the other bands, and how many times have you played at it?
This was the second time we've done Wacken. The last time we played there, it was raining. It rains immensely every year, as it was in 2017 was the last time we played it, and it was actually beautiful this time. There was no rain. Yeah, it's quite the experience, you know. It's like the Super Bowl of heavy metal, I guess, if I was to describe it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the mecca. Like, if you get to play Wacken, I mean, that's what we want to do, you know. That's the Super Bowl.
What time of the day were you on stage?
We had a great time. It was right as it was getting dark, so I think we went on at 9. So it was just starting to get dark as we were playing, so it was perfect time.
Okay.
It was awesome. By the time we were done, it was dark out.
Do you get a chance to see any of the other bands, though, or are you just literally driving in, playing your show, and leaving?
I try to watch as many as I can. I watched Testament this last time. They're always fun to watch. They're friends of mine, so I always love watching them. Watching Alex play is like getting a guitar lesson, you know, so free guitar lesson. And they were killer. Who else did I see? Hyrax was killer. Uli Roth is playing on the stage right next to us, just before us. And wow, yeah, that guy can play another guitar lesson right there. I got a lot of guitar lessons.
The amazing thing about Wacken, and this always blows my mind, it sells out before they even announce the bands for the following year.
Oh yeah, totally. It'll probably sell out. When do the tickets go on sale?
They could be sold out as we speak.
Yeah, those festivals work like that. But pretty cool, man. I wish America would get, you know, something like that going. I know that they're trying with, like, Rocklahoma, and there's a few other ones, too, but it just doesn't take off like what's going on in Europe. I mean, the whole season over there is just phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. So you said something about guitar lessons there, and right before, I had to rush back because my son just started playing guitar about 2 weeks ago.
And, oh, right on.
Yeah, and do you remember your first guitar lessons?
Yes, I do. Man, this is such a long time ago, but, you know, my parents knew I had an interest in it, and my mom had bought me this little guitar from, she used to work at Kmart, like, way, way back in the day, and this guitar, they couldn't sell them. There was two of them in the brick-and-mortar store, or whatever. There was no online back then anyway, and they were going to get rid of them, so they ended up selling one to my mom for like $19. And I still have that guitar today.
Nice.
And she brought it home because she knew I was interested. I started playing that thing, and they started giving me lessons. And once, you know, I was hungry back then. Like, the very first song that I ever learned was Crazy Train, you know. And once they saw how I was just dedicated to absorbing everything, you know, they put me in lessons with a guy that taught rock guitar. So I learned all my pentatonic scales and the basics and stuff like that. And then they got me hooked up with this other dude that was like, he was like an acoustic guitar, like folk guitar player. So I got this, I just got a ton of a variety of what I was learning. Like, so much stuff come at me, but I like metal, you know?
Mm.
So I started really getting into, like, I think my favorite band back then was Riot.
Wow.
I still love Riot.
Yeah,
yeah,
great band. Great band. When did you realize that you were good at guitar?
Oh, I haven't realized it yet. No, I just, you know, I'm okay, I guess, but, like, there is some people out there, I kind of compare it to, like, the front flip on the motorcycle, you know. I don't remember who the first, I don't know if it was Travis Pastrana that did the first front flip on the motorcycle, but how extreme that is when it happened, that's kind of what I consider is happening with guitar right now. There's so many players that are extreme, and they're phenomenal, you know? So it's like, I can't do that. I think some of that stuff, I have a mental block. I think a lot of players do, because none of that was going on back in the day. You know, we used to think that Ace Frehley was a fast guitar player. And, he was not. But he was still Ace Frehley, you know, he's a legend and he was great at what he did. And then you start seeing guys like Randy Rhodes came out and I was trying to learn that stuff and was just going, well, this is this. And then, Eddie Van Halen, obviously, it's just a different level. And once, you know, stuff like that started happening, I learned the best I could. And then my guitar teacher was always like, become your own style, do your own style, you know. So I kind of locked onto that. And I don't know what it is. My style is kind of frantic, I guess.
I think what all those guitar players have, there's a million guitar players that can play all the stuff and play it fast, but they don't have what I'd call an identity. That you can hear them play and you know it's them.
Yeah, you're right about that. There's a lot of internet guitar players that are great. You watch them and you're like, holy shit, that's badass. But, you know, can they do it live? I kind of compare it to, did you ever see Braveheart?
Yes.
Do you remember when they're throwing the rocks, when he comes back home, and then they throw the rocks at each other at the festival,
mm-hmm.
and his buddy goes, yes, but can you do that in battle? And that's kind of how I look at the internet guitar players. Can they do that in battle on a live show, you know?
Yeah.
So that's about the analogy I got of it. But
so, Michael, has it got difficult, more difficult as your body gets older, to play this kind of music? Or how do you adapt to that?
I'm not dealing with the... I'm just totally not dealing with getting older. I don't want to deal with it, so I just keep it in the back of my mind. I still feel like I'm 25 years old, and... you know, I'm pretty active. I'm going to be 57 here in about 2 weeks, so I'm still pretty active. I snowboard. I run. Well, I used to. I tore my meniscus a few weeks ago, and so I've been kind of hobbling around on that. But I still feel like I'm 25. You know, I'm going to recover from this. I probably won't, but you know, I think I'm gonna.
You haven't had any issues with your fingers or your hands?
No, not really. I don't even really have calluses on my left hand. I'm a right-handed guitar player, so my left hand is on the fretboard. I don't really have any calluses either. I think, you know, maybe, and that's the other thing. I'm always trying to get better. You know, I'm always trying to do something. How do I improve my technique? How do I get better? So actually, over the last 2 years, I've been trying to strengthen up my left hand, and calluses are just starting to develop on my left hand from, you know, because I'm pressing a little bit harder. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Whining? Do I sound like I'm whining?
No.
I am, huh?
No. The other thing, Michael, I want to talk to you about is this phrase that keeps coming up with a lot of bands now, that they don't have what, you know, the term, they're not as hungry as they used to be. But when it comes to the music you play, which is for all, but you know, I term it trash metal more or less. When people talk about yourselves and Death Angel and Testament and Overkill, they all still say that ye guys are all still releasing fantastic music. Like when somebody mentions hunger to you, what do you say to them? Like, has it changed for you, the hunger, where it comes from, so that you can maintain what you do, or has it always been the same?
Early on, it's always been the same. I will say that, but I've changed my appetite. I guess the way I'm still hungry, as we all are. I mean, if you've got a person in the band that isn't, your band is not going to have the longevity. You know, like we're really grateful that we're still doing this and we're still relevant after nearly 40 years. And these other bands, they're still bringing the fire. You know. So, like I said, I feel like I'm 25 years old. I'm still writing some of the best music that I think I've ever written, and so are the rest of the guys in the band. But the hunger thing is, and when I say I changed my appetite, I've just reviewed my goals. I've made things a little more realistic. You know, when I was sitting in my room playing guitar and learning Crazy Train, I wanted to be in that room with Kiss, you know, Kiss Alive, with all those people everywhere. I wanted to be on stage and be a rock star. You know, that's not easily obtainable. So you change your goals, which is your appetite, and you bring your goals down, and you start off with different courses in your meal. So I had to adjust it and say, okay, I want to be in a band. I want to make a record. After I make a record, I want to tour. After I tour, I want the shows to get, I want to make more records. You lower your goals a little bit so you can build it up slowly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I look at that. And I've stayed hungry all these years with that attitude, you know, because there's always something that I'm trying to reach. I'm trying to get someplace. And if it's not with the band, it's personally with my playing, you know.
Do you think, Michael, that, bring up two things here, that you were out of the band for a while and that made you hungry when you got back? And also, I think when band members leave and new guys come in and you connect with them, that motivates you as well. Would you agree with both of those?
Totally, 100%. When I was out of the band, I took some time off to raise my family and stuff. And when I came back to the band, well, the whole time, I never listened to any of the new records that those guys made while I was gone, because seriously, it was like somebody sleeping with my girlfriend, you know, and nobody wants that. It's like, it's kind of heart-wrenching a little bit to see somebody up there playing in your spot. So yeah, I definitely wanted to get back to it at some point. You know, it's in my blood. I'm always going to play whether I'm in a band or not. So I'm always going to do it. And then the other part of it, like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I'm always hungry for it. When I came back and having new people in the band, when someone leaves, like, you know, Bittner, you know, the big one that left back in the early day was Newstead. Then Bittner left and he went to Overkill, which both of those guys made the right decisions. You don't say no to Metallica. You don't say no to Overkill.
He just left Overkill.
Yeah, he left Overkill. And, you know, but Shadows Fall. Holy smoke, those guys are going to get, you know, start hitting it again. They were huge back in the day, and I hope they get that back. And I don't think they're going to have any issues getting that back. I think it's going to come back pretty quick. So, you know, prayers to them, and all the best of luck to all those guys. But getting a new guy in the band, even when Bittner came in the band after Kelly Smith, that new and fresh person in the band brings the hunger, brings fire back to it. And Ken Mary, the drummer that's playing with us now, that's played on the last three records.
Phenomenal drummer.
Hi, this is Ken Mary, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. So focus, people, focus.
Oh, my God. I saw we were in Europe when Jason told us he was leaving, and Steve Conley, the other guitar player, said, well, what do you think about this guy? And he showed me a video of Ken. I'm like, I don't know. You know, can he send something that he's playing one of our songs? So he played Hammerhead, and they sent it over to us, and I watched it, and I'm like, okay, that guy's badass. And then I go, yeah, let's give him a try. So when we got home, we all got in a room. I knew within like 10 seconds that he was the guy. As soon as he started playing, I think we played Hammerhead first, and I got about 10 seconds into it, and I'm like, that's our dude right there. And it just brings fresh life, you know, brings new life to the band.
Yeah, he's an absolutely phenomenal drummer, but he doesn't really come from a thrash metal background. I know him more for like House of Lords, Alice Cooper, not the fast stuff that you guys play.
Oh, Ken's got a dark side. Yeah, because that's the same thing that I said. But man, that dude! And if you listen to him on the records, this is what he really enjoys playing. You know, I'm like, dude, you're a freaking rock star. You're like the real deal. What are you doing with us? And he's like, I love the songs. I love the structure of the songs. I love just being able to play. And, you know, when he joined the band, I never was like, you got to play just like Kelly, or you got to play just like Jason. You know, like, give him the spot and just be like, dude, I'm hiring you for your style. Hiring's a bad word, because we never hired him. He became a full member very quickly, you know, just based on his personality and his playing, he fit right in perfectly. But his style is one thing that's been a huge asset for the band. And the dude, he is the best double bass player that I've ever heard. He's great.
Yeah, I don't know whether I told you this before, but some of the House of Lords guys were telling me stories about Andy Johns with Ken. And one of the stories was Andy had a tendency to get rid of the drummers in the band and bring in someone like Cozy Powell or someone like that to play the drums on the record. And Andy Johns apparently said that Ken was one of the best drummers that he ever had in the studio.
Yep, I can attest to that. The guy is magic when he plays. There's no doubt about it.
Mm. Now, Michael, you bring up like Jason being in all these bands, and you know, the trend these days is for musicians to play on multiple projects, and a lot of that is, you know, they want to like. It's a way of earning some extra money, or they want to play with other guys. But you seem now to be just a one band guy. Was that always your goal?
You know, I never knew that this band was going to have the longevity it does. I knew I would always be playing in a band no matter what. I've played in other bands. I've been asked to be in other bands, but this is my baby. You know, like, yeah. I've done a lot of the songwriting over the years. These guys are my brothers. And even though, you know, we don't have like Van Halen success, I wouldn't want to do anything else. I mean, it's home for me. I'll do gigs with other bands for sure. But I mean, my commitment is to Flotsam for sure.
Mm, it's just that your name doesn't seem to come up like a lot of other guys in like Mark and say Death Angel is out now with Kerry King. And, you know, drummers seem to be moving around to all these different bands and you're constant, you know, and,
yeah.
Which is great to see. But it is a bit of an anomaly.
You know, if I got asked to do some stuff, if I have the time, if the slot's correct and it's something I believe in, sure, I'll go and do it. You know, and I do guest solos on records and stuff for other people or other bands. But I would have done the Smashing Pumpkins gig, you know, if they would ask me to do that, because I just thought that would have been a cool experience. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if I do this, this is going to be a stepping stone for Flotsam, you know. So I'm always like trying to work it for my band, you know.
As long as it doesn't get in the way, though, because then you know you don't want the difficult decision, which is, I think, one thing that Jason said the other day, that all the schedule started to, you know, back up on him, and it was like, hang on a second, they want to do this when I'm supposed to be doing that. I have to make a decision to. I'm sorry, but I can't do one or both of them, you know. So that's I think that's a thing that a lot of it's decisions that a lot of musicians face these days.
Totally. I love my time off, though, too. You know, I love touring. I love doing shows. I love traveling for sure. Mm. But sometimes I just like to travel and not play. You know, like I want to be in the wilderness. I want to snowboard. I want to hike. I don't hunt anymore, but just stuff like that. I'm into it.
Mm. So. How has your musical tastes changed over the years? Because you guys still seem to be able to write in the Flotsam mold, more or less. You don't really go off of that, but I'm sure the music you listen to now is probably a lot different to when you were 17 or 18 years old.
Oh my God, this is such a great question, because I can go on about this. Yeah, when I was 17 years old, that was right in the midst of the 80s, and I hated that crap, you know, like, Thompson Twins would come on the radio and I'd just be like, oh, kill me, you know, or Modern English, like, kill me, whatever, Bananarama, whatever. But now I love the 80s music. That stuff comes on the radio and I'm like, hell yeah, you know, I'll listen to all of it. And I know all the words, you know. I didn't even realize that I know all the words to all this shit. I guess it's over the years.
MTV.
Mm-hmm. And when they played music, actually when they used to play music. So I listen to that. I listen to satellite radio. I listen to yacht rock, which is kind of funny. And then I listen to a lot of 70s music. I don't usually listen to metal until we start getting our game face on, you know, to go play or to do a record. I'll start listening. I'll throw Slipknot on and start listening to some of that and try to get my anger going so I can start writing again.
Michael, do you listen to Flotsam stuff before you start writing for a record?
You know, that's an awesome question, because I've never... Out of all the years, I've never, like, after I get it back from mastering, have ever listened to any of our songs. You know, maybe because I've just heard it so much, I'm just like, I'm done with it. You know, but Blood in the Water and this I Am the Weapon, this last one,
mm-hmm.
I've listened to them a bunch of times, and I'm really proud of these two records. I think they're the two best records that we've ever released. And, you know... That's just it's just weird to sit back and I'm proud of my guys too, you know, like, that's another thing. It's like, hey, we did this, you guys. This is like legit, like really legit new music coming out. And there's not a lot of good new music coming out, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you guys are pretty consistent with the new stuff too. I don't know whether that's because you're contractually obligated to do it, or you just decide, right, we're going to make an album every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years. That's what our, usually how long it takes, about 2 or 3 years, but it doesn't take us that to actually write it and record it. It only takes us about maybe 8 months to do all that stuff.
Okay.
The other time we're usually touring, or we're trying, you know, who knows what we're doing, trying to do dates. Right now it's really hard to do dates in the United States with the price of things. Tour buses are expensive. Gas is crazy. It's a little easier in Europe because you don't have the long drives between shows and stuff like that. So there's definitely new challenges in the business than there used to be. And, you know, record labels don't give you $1 million like they used to do back in the day. You know, they're on a budget too now.
Yeah. The other question I want to ask you, Michael, is, you know, I give you an example of an interview I did. I did an interview with JJ French from Twisted Sister. And he brought out a book a couple of years ago all about the music business. And he told me in the interview, he said that the business itself is just horrible for the artists, right? Now, you've been in the business 40 years, right? How do you not let that beat you down where you just don't want to be involved in it anymore? I'm always fascinated with this because you would have gone into the industry at a young age. You're probably naive. All you want to do is make records, you know, and the label's going to give you all this money and, you know, everything's going to be great. And then the business starts interfering with everything. And it's happened to you with labels. You were on Elektra, then you went, I think you were on MCA, and then you were on small labels, and now you're probably bringing out records and AFM records now. You've gone through the whole gamut of it all. Like, how does that not affect you?
It does affect you. You know, you got to keep your head up and realize that at this point we're making records because we love to do it. You know, we're not doing it for the money. There's no money in making records these days. They don't sell. I mean, they do. Look, fortunately, our audience, the metal people, they want something physical in their hands. So vinyls are taking off again. I don't even own a record player, but I've got a shit ton of vinyls, you know, so that's all coming back. I'm going to have to go buy a record player now. But that, from that aspect, we do it for the love. We make our bread and butter from merch and guarantees from shows. But as you're saying, you know, confirm it. Like, even the clubs are going, well, now we want a part of your merch. You know, they want 10, 15, and 20% of it. I'm like, okay. So what I'm going to start doing now is 1099. You know, they asked me for a W-2 when we play a show, so I'm going to ask them, because I'm going to 1099 them for the 20% that they take, because I think that's a horseshit maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, we're totally the last people to get paid for anything. You know, our crew, everybody gets paid. Sometimes we walk away with nothing, you know, but that's just the way it is. Sometimes we walk away with a lot more, and, you know, the business is harsh. And I'm not saying that to, like, you know, make anybody, to shoot anybody's dreams or anything down or anything like that. It's just, it's really tough for new bands, and I feel bad that they have to pay to play. That's horseshit, too. I don't like that. I don't like the meet and greets. It's taking advantage of the fans a little bit. You know, we always go back after our shows, and we talk to as many people as we can. We need to charge somebody to talk to them, you know? Horseshit. That's horseshit. Focus! That's just me, you know? From a business model, that's not a very good business model, you know? That's not a way to make money. If my management was here, they'd be going, shut up, dude, because you're not going to be making any money doing that.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I want to bring up with you, Michael, you did something last year in a press release that I think happens to a lot of bands, but they don't use that as a reason. They'll use any other reason other than this one. you guys cancelled the tour. I think it was like 10 or 12 shows. And you actually said in the press release that one of the reasons you cancelled was low ticket sales. Now, bands will go out of their way not to mention that. But you guys did it, and kudos to you guys for doing it, because I think it's so competitive out there now. There's so many gigs that has to be one of the reasons why a lot of these tours or shows get cancelled now, but none of them will admit it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, that's not something that we wanted to do at that time. There was a lot of factors to it, you know. It was right after COVID. You know, well, I shouldn't say right after COVID, but bands are starting to get out there. Everything's oversaturated. So when stuff like that's happening, our guarantees are going down. And, you know, like, if we play a club for a certain amount of money, the following year when we come back, you know, that's probably the same guarantee that they're going to give us. And when you have low ticket sales, it gives promoters and clubs leverage on that to bring that down. So from a business standpoint, you know, you got to try to keep your guarantees going up. And we're transparent. We had a bunch of meetings about this, the five of us, and we decided to be completely transparent about what was going on. Even though, you know, the metal crowd, they're usually walk-ups anyway. You know, even though there might have been 100 ticket sales at a club that holds 300-400 people, you know, we probably would have got 200, maybe, who knows? Who knows what it would have been? But we were also asked by the clubs, a couple of the clubs, to be like, hey, let's revamp this and do it at another time. So that was another reason why we're like, okay, not ashamed to admit it. Don't think it was actually because we suck or anything like that. We think it was, you know, it's just the economy. You know, when you've got Testament, you've got Overkill, you've got Iron Maiden, you've got all these bands who are all playing in the same month, who's going to come to a Flotsam show? You know, nobody has any money left over. So it's just a way to play it smart. I'd rather do it that way. I lost a friend over the thing too, you know, because we were out with, we were supposed to go out with Generation X, and that's Rob Duke's band.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me off because of that, because, you know, they were direct support for that, which, yeah, he doesn't understand the business, obviously. But, you know, it happens. People, we've been canceled on, we've been direct support for a couple bands. There was one year where we were going to go out with Death Angel, and they canceled a week before. But I'm still friends with those guys, you know. No hard feelings. I understand the business.
Yeah, this is the thing that sometimes blows my mind as well, is that, you know, you got to plan your life. And then you get things like this happening right at the last minute. And you're kind of scrambling. Now what am I going to do? Or are you in a position where you know, you have other work that you can slot into pretty quickly? Because with some bands now, like, they might have a job and they might say, right, I need the next 3 months off.
Mm-hmm.
And it might work for some people that way, but I don't know what it's like with you, where, you know, you're flexible enough where you can, you know, you have other avenues to earn some money if a tour gets cancelled and it's not your fault.
Yeah, my dark side is I'm an IT guy. So, you know, and I work on my own hours. I do it when I want. So, you know, I've always got that backup. Over the years, you know, I went and got my degree, my bachelor's degree. And it's just because I know, you know, this is a flaky business to begin with. I love it, but, you know, you can't really rely on it. I can't rely on a check. I don't know that I'm going to make $110,000 a year guaranteed. You know, like, if I have a real job, I will, you know. And when you have a family, you've got that responsibility, it starts to get really difficult to make those decisions. And that's getting harder for bands these days too, you know, because everybody's guarantees are going down. Gas prices, we had a whole checklist of things that were going wrong on that tour that we canceled, you know. We couldn't find a tour bus. Our sound man canceled at the last second.
Oh, wow. And that's a big one.
Huge. And then the clubs were calling us going, hey, let's reschedule. So, I mean, those three things alone is like, okay, let's reschedule.
who
it keeps the clubs happy.
Who was the one guy? There's always one guy who's the optimist. Who was the one guy in the band saying, let's just go out anyway and see what happens?
We didn't have one of those this time. It was a unanimous thing. Okay. After looking at all the facts, it was like, yeah.
Not worth it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm usually the guy that says, let's go, let's go, let's go. And AK too. AK's AK would stay out on the road forever if he could. He's a, that guy is a touring monster.
What? How has your attitude to touring changed? Because you've probably gone to a lot of the same cities now. You've probably walked around them a million times. You've probably done all the partying you want to do. I don't know whether you want to just sit in a hotel room and watch Netflix now or read a book. Like, has it really changed for you now the way you've approached the road?
Nope. I love to travel. I love every aspect of that. And you won't catch me sleeping in too often. I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to go, even though I might have been to the city 10 times, but I'm going to go see something different every time. I love that part of it. I love the experiences. And even if I wasn't in a band, I'd still be traveling.
I think, Michael, though, that the one thing with touring, and I've asked a couple of musicians this as well, when you're away, you miss things at home, like birthdays and things like that. I'm sure that's happened to you.
Oh, yeah. I'm a grandparent now, so I've missed my kids' birthdays, and I've missed my grandkids' birthdays and stuff like that. And, you know, luckily I've got a family that understands and they're very supportive of what I do. And, you know, back in the day, missing a birthday was a lot different than now because you've got, you know, what is it on your phone? You can do
FaceTime
messaging. Mm-hmm. Yeah, FaceTime messaging or whatever. And so you can stay connected. Missing birthdays and stuff isn't that bad anymore. It still sucks to be gone. But, you know, missing the girlfriend's birthday is a big one, you know.
Yeah.
I get in a lot of trouble.
I was at the Worcester Palladium at a show probably about 8 or 9 years ago. I'll never forget this. And I was on the stairs. I think I was interviewing Bobby Blitz from Overkill. And as I was coming down, one of the guys in the support band, I'm not going to name the band. I'm sure you know him, but I'm not going to name him. He was sitting on the stairs FaceTiming his kids. And his kids were crying on the phone, pleading with their daddy to come home. And he was crying as well. And my heart went out to the guy. And half an hour later, he had to go out on stage and sing and go, bruh, 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 the vocals and everything. And I was looking at him thinking, and half an hour before that, he was crying with his two kids. He'd probably been on the road for probably like 6 or 8 weeks or maybe 2 months and he'd missed something. And I'm sure that is prevalent throughout the industry. And the fans just don't get to see that.
Yeah, you know, we're dedicated. Like I was saying, it runs in our blood. It's something that we've done all of our lives, and we're just severely dedicated to it, to where we miss stuff like that, you know. And I have regrets about that, and I'm sure that dude was regretting that whole thing. But you know what? His kids are going to grow up, and they're going to be proud of what dad's doing, you know, because it's very interesting, and it'll be okay, you know. You know, depending on this, obviously, like some of the bigger things that happen, like if there's somebody that passes away or something like that, I'm on the first plane home, you know. But missing stuff is definitely one of the cons of being in a band.
So tell me, when the new record is out and where people can get a copy of it, Michael, because again, your new stuff is phenomenal. I don't know how you keep doing it. I don't know what soup you're drinking, but just keep doing what you're doing and I'll keep helping.
There's blood in the water.
Yeah. Just
thank you.
Just keep doing it.
It comes out on September 13th and hopefully there's going to be a follow-up tour. I don't think there will be a follow-up tour at the end of the year. I think it's going to be springtime of next year when things start revving up again. And then back into the festival season's over in Europe. But before that, in January, we're on 70,000 tons of metal. This will be our third time on the boat. My favorite gig. I love it. I can get some sun. I get beer. I get to play. And then I get paid. Those are some fun things. But it's actually my favorite gig. The way that they do that, it's a well-oiled machine, how they do it. It's just the cool. Have you done that before?
I have not. I've never done one of the cruises.
Man, you got to do that.
Yeah, I got to wait for my kids. I think I've got a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old. And final question for me, Michael, and not the new record now, but what's the best song you've ever written?
The best song I've ever written... musically is a song off of Blood in the Water called Reaggression. I think that's my favorite Flotsam song and probably the song I'm most proud of writing the music of. Of course, I had some help with AK and Ken and Steve and Bill, but I love that song. I go back and listen to it, and just the performance that those guys did on it make me want to listen to it more. It gives me the chills that how well it came out. It is way better than I ever expected when I was writing it.
What to you in all genres of music, what to you when you listen to it and say, that's the perfect song?
Oh, this is an easy one. Uptown Funk.
Okay. That,
I know it's not in the same genre or anything like that, but it's a perfect song. If you've never heard it before and you put that song on, you know where it's going. You know exactly what's getting ready to happen because it's such a well-known structure. And just the way it gets built into the choruses and stuff like that. If you're not happy, you listen to that song, you will be happy. I think it's just a perfect piece of music.
Nice.
And I might get stoned for that, for saying something like that. But,
Why not? Why? Music is music. It moves you in different ways. Like, the music I listened to between the ages of 16 and 21, the bands that I listened to then might have better albums, but they'll never have the same emotional attachment to me than I did in those years. And I'm sure you're probably the same, you know?
Exactly the same. We did Bang Your Head Festival a few years ago, and Foreigner was playing at it. So I'm sitting on the side of the stage watching, who was I? I forget the name, who I was watching at the time, but Mick Jones from Foreigner was standing right next to me, and I turned around. I'm like, holy shit, you're Mick Jones. I'm like, you're responsible for like my youth and music and stuff like that. Like, feels like the first time, Hot-Blooded. Oh my God. That'll never happen again. Those are such great songs. They were written so perfectly, sang perfectly, and played perfectly. It'll never happen again, you know? So gives me that, and it takes me back. If I hear Hot-Blooded, I can remember being a kid listening to that, you know?
What about the Flotsam stuff? Can you listen to that and it'll bring you back straight away?
Yeah, I mean, there's some Ugly Noise. There's definitely some songs in that brings me back to some weirdness because I was out of the band before, and that was my choice, but I took some time off to raise my kids, and when I came back, you know, it was kind of like, am I doing the right thing? Should I be doing this? Is it okay? I feel like I'm betraying my family, you know? But everybody was supportive, and we continued and kept growing and growing. And
first time I saw you was on that tour.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
What show? What venue was it?
Worcester Palladium in Worcester, Massachusetts. I think you were out with, might have been with Testament and someone else.
Maybe. Testament and Overkill.
Yeah.
Was on that
and
one.
You guys opened. Yeah, that was the show.
Wow.
Yeah. I never got to see you back in the 80s or in the early 90s. You didn't really play in Ireland.
What's that? I'm sorry?
You never really played in Ireland.
Oh, no. We've done Dublin a couple of times, but that's about it. I think we've played there maybe four times since I've been in the band.
Okay, but would any of those have been in the 80s?
No.
Yeah.
Everything, all that's all fairly recently.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Anyway, Michael, I could talk to you all night, but I'm going to leave you go.
Awesome. Dude, it's always good to talk to you, man. And thanks for checking it out. I'm glad you're digging the record.
Oh,
thanks for taking the time again and asking me some questions and diving deep. Thank you, man.
Yeah. Enjoy going back to Europe.
Oh, thanks a lot. I definitely will.
All right. Have a good rest of the night, Michael. Thanks for calling me.
You too. Thank you. I'll talk to you later, Richard.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview with Michael Gilbert. And you can always go up to focusonmetalpod.com. Put Michael Gilbert into the search and you can get all of his past interviews as well. And while you're up there in your web browser, if you want to check out everything going on with Flotsam and Jetsam, you can head over to flotstilldeath.com, which is their official website. And on there, you can keep track of tour dates. You can pre-order I Am the Weapon. You can go to their web shop as well. They got some pretty sweet t-shirts up there. And keep up with everything in the world of Flotsam and Jetsam. So hopefully these guys will continue to crank out great music every couple of years. I'd be happy to have more Flotsam every single year, but yeah, I know that's kind of a wishful thinking, right? But again, big thanks to Michael for taking once again a good chunk of his time to come on the show, talk about what's going on with him, with Flotsam, with the new album, all that good shit. And as I said, hopefully we'll have him on many more times. But in the meantime, that's it. There ain't no more stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, thanks for listening and have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again, as always, remember,
Focus on Metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.